This is Spectacle of Power, a fiction podcast written by Logan Reynolds, with sound by Timothy Brunskill. Prologue, The Shortest Night. The town was alight, every inch of it consumed by deathly heat. People scampered, frantic as wildcats, until cornered and forced to wrestle with the blaze. Debris was desperately heaped on the burgeoning flames. A townsguard, panicked by the unnatural swiftness and intensity of the threat, unlatched his chestplate and launched it hopelessly onto the stack. Insuppressible, the tendrils of fire continued to rage. At the rear gate, another guard heaved a sword in clumsy circles, fighting a phantom enemy, his visage twisted with confusion. A moment earlier, he had seen a cloaked man step through a wall of flame, only to weave back out again, unmolested by its power. The same man's laughter now rose above the elemental roar, sharp and bloodthirsty.
Foul warlock!
The guard gasped, half mad and swinging.
Demon!
All sounds of resistance were soon washed out under the maleficent drone of the inferno. No screams, no moans, no profanity-laden effusions remained. All had succumbed to the ambush of destruction. It was done. Overlooking the valley, a small assembly of soldiers awaited their master's return. Their eyes were fixed on the town below, an orange orb of light flickering in the black firmament of the vast country. Some of them smoked, others shuffled in tense silence. Their secondary involvement in the night's activities had cast an awkward, restless mood over the encampment. As foot soldiers, they were not accustomed to playing second fiddle.
"There he is,"
one of them whispered at last. The other soldiers looked intently into the shroud of night, straining to make out the outline of their general. At last he lumbered into view, a slight limp betraying the physical exertion of the past hour.
"My lord, you have succeeded?"
The man did not answer at first. Instead, he withdrew a flask from his gambeson and hungrily downed the sweet wine within. He wiped his lip with his sleeve. "At ease," he spoke, partially revived. "Tonight we have shown our enemies the very price of insolence. Let them be an example to all who would seek to obstruct our path. Under my banner, there will be no restraint, and there will be no mercy." The soldiers jeered, uninhibited and exalted. More wine was fetched at once from the barrel which they had hauled uphill and across dale. They would savour the victory before returning to the south. Overhead, a soldier noticed a hawk swoop past, the silver of its wings catching the light of the moon. It screeched, suddenly and full-throatedly, excited by the violence. Chapter 1. One foot in front of the other. The travellers convened for dinner in the evening's half-light, the falling sun casting a golden softness over empty plains. Karnik tinkered with a campfire, adding kindling and blowing on the capricious little flames. His brow fissured with concentration. "Look steady," Casper remarked, helping himself to a bowl of stew. The protein was a variety of venison, sinewy but flavourful, especially with the addition of Nima's foraged herbs and dark berries. She had recently taken to long walks in the mid-afternoon. In her absence, Casper often found himself worrying, kneading over scenarios of increasing horror in his mind. After all, there was an abundance of bandits in this part of the country, as well as creatures better left undisturbed. Yet Nima always returned, and usually with a bulging satchel under her arm, the huntress and her bounty. "Wind's picking up," Karnik said. "We ought to find a more sheltered spot when we camp tomorrow." Auburn Head's siblings, Lennox and Ledis, took their place next to Casper. Ledis carried his characteristic sneer, displeased as usual with the offering, but he did not complain. His fatigue was too great. "It'll be another 3 days at least before we reach Cyril," Karnik continued, his voice deep and solemn. That is assuming the weather holds. The skies have been darkening. Rain might not be such a bad thing. It would bathe the horses at least, Lennox said. Ledus hummed in agreement. They stink. Karnik frowned. If it were just a short visitation of rain, yes. But the Verda is known for tempests, great wrathful outpourings. We would need to take cover, possibly for days, and that would slow our advance to a crawl. And our contact is expecting us soon, Casper chirped. He had joined the new wardens only a couple of months ago, but had felt an immediate, empowering sense of purpose, and it was yet to abate. He liked that they were always moving, always striving towards a destination and a goal. A few paces away, the horses whinnied. Nima passed a comb through the mane of her silver mare, gently caressing the animal's jaw. As Casper turned to see her, an errant sheet of wind suddenly lifted the light blue fabric of her dress. Silhouetted against the horizon, long hair and linen adrift, it struck him that she resembled a beautiful wraith. Lennox cocked her head, disquieted by the image. Will you join us, Nima? The stew's delicious. Why, yes. I'll be over shortly. Thank you. The party sat in silence for a short while, wooden ladles scraping on wooden bowls. Beneath the pot, the flames continued to flicker, lending their life-preserving power. Karnik reclined into a more comfortable position and allowed himself to relax, though only a smidgen. Casper was the first to break the silence. Could you tell us a story, Karnik? A pause. Again, lad. If you wouldn't mind, Casper replied with boyish curiosity. You have such interesting tales. Karnik bowed his head, a trifle embarrassed. Only if it will not bore the others. Lennox shook her head. Ledus cast a hand in the air, his expression one of apathetic assent. Well, all right, but where to start tonight? Karnik's face, a great boulder weathered by the events of a fully experienced life, tensed in consideration. He contemplated the many stories he might pluck out of the archive of his memories, those he might repeat like an incantation and thus breathe in new life. He hesitated. Some of them frightened him. Even then, after all those years, the man who towered well beyond 6 feet, who maneuvered a battle axe with the dexterity of a cutlass, was still troubled by the shadows of his past. There is something I ought to share with you all, he said, finding his resolve. I have not broached the subject before, did not see the purpose until now. As Karnik spoke, Nima joined the group. She kneeled behind Casper, her eyes fixed on the undulating flames of the campfire. Yet now we journey to Cyril, a city-state that is well connected and active in the continent's affairs. No doubt we will hear plenty about their concerns in the south, that which concerned my childhood home, and the mad dog who's taken up the mantle of command. Casper mouthed the name of the southern general to himself, so strange and foreign to his tongue, Ithgarod. Lennox exchanged a questioning glance with her brother. And even though I would prefer not to revisit this chapter, he said, wincing a little, it is right you should hear it. It is time. With a loose branch, he absently poked the campfire, then continued. I have told you before that my family came to Visica from the Broken Islands when I was very small. My father was a craftsman and sold carvings from a stall. They were a novelty, really. When that business dried up, he found work in the mines. It was backbreaking, but he saw it as dignified in its own way. As Broken Islanders, it is not in our nature to shy away from hard work. My mother, and by extension myself when I was older, worked in a wealthy merchant's home, mostly seeing to cleaning and other domestic chores. What was the family like? Did they treat you well? Casper asked. Leda slid out a sigh, unreasonably irritated by the interruption. Must you ask every question that springs to mind? Karnik ignored him. Oh, more or less. The merchant was a shrewd businessman, but not vindictive. His wife was quiet for the most part, sullen. They had a son too, a couple of years my junior. At the time he went by Thane, although that name is all but lost to the wind now. Anyway, when I was about 12 we became friendly, in that easy way children who are brought together through luck and circumstance seem to manage. We had little in common, in truth, but I was grateful to receive his civility. Not everyone was so lucky. The boy had a scolding temper at times, and his parents were frequently the target of his ire. He seemed to have unlimited reserves of contempt for them, their lifestyle, and their simplicity, as he put it. And he didn't view your family in the same way, Lennox asked. No, at least not on the surface. Rather, I think he glorified our limited means, saw us as participants in a sort of noble struggle. He was an unusual child, philosophical beyond his years, and brooding as a result. But as I said, he was kind enough to me. My family lived in the Mud Quarter, he continued, a squalid neighbourhood on the fringe of Visakha. It gives me no pride to recall that we were actually better off than most families in the area. Most boys my age were pulled into some illicit dealing or another. Mouths had to be fed, so it was an inevitability. I even knew a couple of boys, good lads, who worked at calm houses with their sisters, serving the upper classes. A grubby business, one might remark from a perch of privilege, but certainly safer than drug smuggling or petty thievery. Who could begrudge them? Casper bowed his head empathetically while the siblings looked on, attentive. Nima's face was unreadable as she stared into the distance. Anyway, he said, Thane wanted to see the Mud Quarter one afternoon, so we went. His parents had forbidden him from journeying to such a cagey part of the city, but such refusals are no way to dispel a precocious child's curiosity. So I led him through the narrow corridors of the quarter, or downhill, or slick from the runoff of central Visakha, and he seemed to enjoy the backdrop, the squawking and hollering of the markets, snatches of conversation passed from window to window, entryway to balcony. There was a chumminess in Visakha, you see. We looked after our own. Of course, in every community, there are spoiled eggs, and our path soon crossed with one such group of children, a few years older than us. I was showing Thane the stream that snaked behind my family's home. For the most part, it was an unremarkable little body of water, somewhat dirty, not particularly idyllic, except for the tiniest glints of indigo in some of its stones. It's difficult to explain, but I always felt there was a touch of magic about the place, a quality that elevated above its drab setting. In fact, looking back, I think it probably helped me to appreciate beauty, and to see it even in the most mundane environments. I didn't know you were so sentimental, Karnak, Ledis remarked smugly. Lennox needled him in the ribs. What? Carry on, Kay, she insisted. The gang of boys chanced upon us when we had our guard down. I should have known better, should have warned Thane there were opportunists about. The leader of the pack was a brute named Ivano. The type whose only currency was cruelty. Who's your fancy friend? He sneered. Thane's fine clothing had apparently given him away. Get out of here, Ivano, I returned. Already I could feel my cheeks flushing with fear. I was big for my age, solid, but he was even bigger, and partial to knife play, I understood. Furthermore, and this was what concerned me most, on that day he had dragged along his enormous hound. My Aram, Casper whispered. How did you escape? Or did you fight them all off? I was not yet so proficient in the art of combat, Karnak smiled. And as you know, I'm lost without my axe. No, it was actually Thane who stepped forth, facing down their nasty grins, with the stoniest expression I'd ever seen. My name is Thane Baltari, he said, voice steady. Is there going to be trouble here? Why, yes, Ivano spat. I think you'll find you're in a world of trouble, friend. Bit far from your mansion on Rich Prick Hill, aren't you? What happened? Did you trip and roll down? At this, the boys cackled and exchanged satisfied glances. Thane maintained his glare, the tension rising. Finally, Thane spoke again. I would advise you to turn around and leave. Please. Please? Bah! Hear that? The twerp begs for mercy. I had noticed as we were squaring off, the hound becoming increasingly agitated. It was now baring its teeth, snarling, straining against its leash. Just go home, Ivano, I said. We're leaving anyway. I don't think so, Barkskin. The party's hardly begun. Suddenly, Ivano lunged forward and struck the hound on its hide. With the lead released, The creature roared to life and surged towards us, eyes bloodshot and blazing with savage intent. I bolted. It seemed like the reasonable thing to do, and expected Thane to follow at my side. Yet curiously, he did not. When I reached the road's edge, I turned back and was surprised to see him still by the stream, rooted to the same spot. His arms were outstretched and there was smoke billowing from his palms. A smouldering wreckage lay before him. He had incinerated the dog. There was a noticeable pause as the goons failed to comprehend what had happened. Then, as they finally regained their bearings, Ivano started to scream. "You killed my pup! You fucking bastard!" Thane took a single step forward, his leather shoes partially submerging in the stream. I could not see his expression, but Ivano and the others recoiled immediately. "Are you going to kill us?" the most cowardly among them whimpered. The colour had drained from his face. Ivano's too, though his fists remained clenched in a defiant posture. "Perhaps, perhaps not. I certainly will if you stick around here, but surely you aren't as stupid as you'll look." With that cue, the group disbanded, fleeing back down the trail towards the swamplands where they lived. Ivano was the last to recede entirely from view, battling with his own pride, I'm sure, but even he, in his profound idiocy, knew not to trifle with a sorcerer. Thus, he lived to brutalize another day. Now, returning to the purpose of the story. "Do you know who Thane grew up to become?" Karnik asked of the others. Ledus, who now had a grave look on his face, was first to answer. "Ithgarod, the exile of Eswad. Indeed. The same man who is now ruthlessly consolidating his power in the south, who considers himself a liberator of the Visigon people and calls himself their commander, though a butcher is what he best resembles."
"I had no idea you'd met him," Lennox said, anxiously flattening her crop of hair.
"I wish I had not, in truth," Karnik replied, a flicker of sadness appearing on his face. "Please, do not think I deliberately suppress this connection from you. I only saw him a handful of times after the incident. Something in our relationship had broken, irrevocably, from that day onward. Perhaps he sensed my uncertainty about him, something which only multiplied after witnessing his talent for destruction. I also suspect the growing darkness inside of him diluted any real need for friendship. Eventually he was shipped off to Eswad to hone his gift, as it was called. Our paths never crossed again." There was silence around the campfire. Casper was in quiet awe of the revelation, while the siblings seemed to grasp for words that would not come. It was Nima, in the end, who broke the lull.
"He must be quite a monster," she said in her sweet lilt. "To be your friend, bathe in the light of your goodness, and still choose a path of shadow."
It was an unexpected comment, and Karnik was touched.
Thank you, Nima."
Conversation meandered for a while, mostly on the subject of weather, how long it would take them to reach Cyril, and the plant life Nima had observed on the plains, prickly purple Marathagus being her favourite, until everyone but Karnik retired to the tents. He stayed awake for another hour, lying uncomfortably on his side, watching the last stand of the embers. It was no surprise to him when his mind finally wandered back to Visica, through the complicated corridors of his memory, to his youth and the melancholic boy he once thought he knew. How wrong he had been. How wrong the continent would be to underestimate him now. Sleep came uneasily that night. In the next installment of Spectacle of Power, we visit a bathhouse in the ancient city of Cyril. We meet a couple of scheming politicians, and a strange woman watches from the shadows. For additional information about the world and its characters, you might like to visit the compendium linked in the show notes. Also, to support this podcast, please consider joining our Patreon. This is an independent project, and your support is greatly appreciated. Thank you so much for listening.